say what's on your mind. The need to pay things back in kind. The right to joke and look absurd. The need to get in the last word. These things they say, they'd never say them to your face. Their feet are clay and you'll put them in their place. Speak your mind and find the haters coming at you quick. What with all their vitriol, your skin just ain't that thick. When you're feeling like a candle melting faster than the wick will burn, eventually you'll learn to carry a big stick.
What's up, folks? That is a bit of a song I wrote called Stick, and it is off an album called The Mean, which came out this past winter. All the music I make is available exclusively through my Patreon page, and there are always plenty of links for you to click to find out what that's all about. If you like listening to what I do, I hope you'll take the time to check it out and maybe pledge a dollar or so to support me and my musical and podcasting pursuits. Podcasters usually give shouts out to their sponsors at the top of each show, and my sponsors are my patrons. I couldn't continue to make music or even pursue the idea of starting this podcast if it weren't for them, and they are the people who get to listen to this show in its entirety. Here, in part one of the show, we only hear excerpts of the songs from my musical guests and I, but the full songs are played in part two. Today's show features a two-part interview with my guests, and the second part is available to patrons only. If you find enjoyment in the music you'll be hearing or the words we speak, I hope you'll click one of the links in the show notes or just find me at patreon.com/SethHaran and get the full picture. So, what's on my mind? We're approaching the halfway point for the year, and I usually take stock of the albums I've been listening to around now, and I have a little honesty session with myself. I take a long listen to the stuff I've been checking out since January, and I have a look at what's real. Even if this is stuff by an artist I have always been moved by, I have to ask, am I spinning this because I love it, or am I doing it out of obligation because I have always loved this artist? And sometimes that's a tough call, because that undue attention I might be giving to a so-so track is time I'm not spending looking for the next new thing that could blow my mind, right? And it's personal, too. I know, as an artist, that not every song I release is intended to bring instant gratification to a listener. You know, some songs are growers, not showers. I feel like I need to give material from a legacy artist the chance to grow on me, because when I look back over the decades, it's always the music that grew on me that still has that staying power, even 20, 30 years later. So what am I checking out that keeps passing the test, that keeps making it to the car speakers when I'm on my way to teach or onto the headphones any other time of day? Well, we got Peter Mulvey, Theo Katzman, Amber Rubarth, Illy Amy. Oh, as controversial as it is, that Prince material that his engineer released against the family's wishes, that's called the Deliverance EP. That's fantastic. I'm also listening to Heather Lloyd's solo album a lot. She's a member of Illy Amy, but she put out her own songs as a solo collection this go-around. The new Petteri Sariola album will be out this summer, and I may or may not have heard that already, because I may or may not be people who know people. Shh. But man, that is going to enlighten the masses when it becomes available in August. He's already released the first single, an instrumental track called San Francisco Drive. I shared it on my Facebook page a few days back and watched the numbers go up. It was getting over 1,000 views an hour for like 3 days straight. It's ridiculous. Viral, viral, viral. Couldn't have happened to a nicer guy. Go, Petteri, go. Ooh. I should also mention a record that's been on my radar for longer than just this year. The album is called Breaking the Script. The band is The Novelists. They are my guests today. We're going to catch up with them in an interview in just a few minutes. They're going to tell us about how they're riding an incredible wave of popularity after winning a contest to play on Train's Sail Across the Sun rock cruise, and how that's really changed their careers overnight. But first, listen up and let's check out a little bit of one of the singles from Breaking the Script. This is called Above the Hiding.
It's been a while, we've been down, now it's time we change the score. Breathe in the air, be who we are. Who would have thought we'd come so far? It's taken a while, but I found that I keep on wanting it more. Never before felt so much love, ready to live this life above the hiding. While I miss the chance to be there, crippled by fear, thinking they'd care, living a lie, I thought the truth would leave me alone to hide. Still I
What's up, novelists?
Hey there.
How's it going?
Excellent, gentlemen. So where are you?
We're in a canyon just east of Reno, Nevada. We just passed a brothel. Welcome to Nevada.
It's cold and stormy and rainy, and it was like 80 2 days ago.
And it's going to snow tonight.
Excellent. And you guys are leaving. You guys are heading towards Utah.
Yeah, we did a little, our first weekend out was just over into Cali. So we played Auburn, then we played right in San Francisco, and then we played down in San Mateo. Had the best San Francisco weekend we have ever had.
Where'd you guys hit?
The first one was at Knee Deep Brewery.
And the beer was so good.
So they were amazing there. It's a super hip, giant warehouse-style brewery.
And a pretty awesome food truck.
And they gave us...
Called No Fucking Way.
Yeah, and they gave us like a case of Bombers, which are the 22 or 24 ounce, usually 22 ounce bottles of beer. So we got a lot of beer on this trip.
Oh, so you guys drive lit. That's how you pass the time.
We're drunk, right? We're absolutely.
What's lit mean?
Yeah. Exactly. We went over to San Francisco after Auburn to play a house concert, but in a little boutique called Lini Ray Boutique, right next to Haight-Ashbury.
Wait, your boutique? You played in a store?
We played in a store, yeah.
After hours.
So it was set up by one of the Sail Across the Sun cruise attendees who was, she's very instrumental on their Facebook group.
All right, so you were talking about the Sail Across the Sun tour, and that's something that I mentioned briefly in promoting you guys in the intro. So can you explain to people who have no idea what Sail Across the Sun means, what that is, and why it was important?
So Sail Across the Sun, it's a cruise ship that's basically chartered by Train, the band Train. Sail Across the Sun, it's a lyric from Drops of Jupiter. And basically it's a music festival that's on a cruise ship. And it's a four-day event, you know, basically like any other music festival where there's just constantly music, a variety of different artists at different stages. And there was a fan voting contest, which a friend of ours from Reno just suggested, hey, you guys should check this out. And she sent me that email. And oftentimes...
Thanks, Barb.
Yeah, no kidding, huh?
Yeah.
So oftentimes we'll submit to things like that. But, you know, as you know with how all that worked, too. So I just submitted and didn't think anything of it. And then a couple weeks later, we got into the first tier of acceptance, which was just basically 10 bands selected by the committee, which was... you know, comprised
six man
of six men and Train. And then there was a voting contest where all the bands could solicit fans from their entire fan base to vote you from the top 10 to the top 5. And then we made it to the top 5. The top 3 would make it on the cruise ship, but the round from 5 to 3 was limited to registered guests of the cruise were the only ones who were able to vote, and they voted us on. So it was kind of like awesome.
That's pretty cool. A lot of contests like that, it's just a straight up popularity contest and it's easy to game, but it sounds like they actually kept some merit in the process at a few different points.
Or they're pre-selected. Yeah, a lot of times they're pre-selected too. We found out that the person who won was sort of chosen to win, and the contest is really just advertisement.
Sure. They got to make a buck.
Yep. Exactly.
And it's really difficult to know at any point how legit any of that is. The thing that was really cool about this contest, though, the first round of elimination was based on the committee. Whether that's better or worse is neither here nor there, but it's at least fair that they're deciding. It's not based on necessarily rigged voting or had the most people. And then the last round of voting was only to the 2,000 people that were already on the ship. So everybody had the same people to draw from.
Yeah, I think that's pretty great.
Well, we're a famous band, so we have 500,000 fans. We're totally going to win this. And anybody who's indies doesn't have a chance. So,
well, and as I understand it, you guys pretty much took over the ship. Like, everybody who was on that boat is now your lifelong fan.
It went very well.
It feels like that at this point. Actually, ever since then, every show we've played, we've had people from the ship come. Either fly from far, or we just show up at the area and there's just a ton of people that were on the cruise ship in that specific area.
All around the country.
It's been happening, all over the country. And it's pretty amazing to have these people who are singing along to every lyric and dancing, and it's amazing, man.
You guys just basically lucked into this, and it seems to be the thing that is kickstarting you guys to the next level.
That would be
a
true statement.
The biggest break that we've had so far. Yep.
Probably hard to quantify, but 5 or 10 times more of a break than any one thing I can think of so far. And I do most of the band booking, and it's really made, I mean, it hasn't made my workload easier at all. It's just made the job easier in the sense that there are just so many more opportunities that we previously were just not able to do. I mean, we were always hoping to get to a point where we could viably tour nationally. And in the last few summers, we were having more of a regional approach, which I think we all still stand by as the right avenue. But what this ended up doing was opening up doors and venues and house concerts and city fairs and festivals and things that are affording us the ability to travel around the country without going completely broke at the same time.
That's an amazing thing, especially nowadays.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to be creative to make it work.
I want to talk about that, because even though it's ancient history for me, ancient history for you guys, it's just been a part of life for so long. Not everybody understands the whole idea of a house concert. Somebody just give me the spiel, pretend I don't know, because a lot of people out there don't know. You hear house concert and some people's eyes just still glaze over. And considering it's pretty much the future of independent music, go for it.
Yeah, so you took me to my first house concert. I mean, other than like house parties I had played, but house concerts are a way for people who want to hear music in a very intimate setting to set up with their favorite artists to come to their home. A person who has a house big enough, and sometimes they're not even big enough, and they do it anyway, which is great. Some of our favorite ones have been in very small homes. But anyway, a host, usually a super music fan, will set up and invite all their friends over for a night of music. It's not a house party. It's not a kegger. It's not a raging party going on with music playing passively in the background.
The focal point is the music.
It's a concert. And so we'll usually set up in their largest common space. And we play totally acoustic with full drums, which is sort of the unique thing our group does.
Wait, you guys sing over? JK plays full kit.
Full kit, yes. And he usually puts a bandana or a t-shirt over the snare drums, sometimes over snare drums and toms, and just has a really, really good sensitivity. So the dynamic is awesome.
Hats off to you, sir. That's quite a feat.
Yeah.
Is he asleep in the back? I haven't heard him speak yet.
Thank you. No, I was resting my eyes.
I'm actually driving. So. Domino effect. I think shortly after meeting you and Joel took me to my first house concert. But same kind of discovery where yeah, it was kind of the future of a different way to perform.
How many house concerts would you say you guys have on the touring you've been doing this year? Like, what's the percentage of house concerts to non-house concert gigs?
Probably 40%.
So close to half. So it's really grassroots. Fans book you directly.
It is.
Absolutely.
And the other thing is, all of the money comes to us, which is awesome.
Because you guys are rich.
Yeah, right. We're super rich. But no, to continue with this house concert thing, a lot of times they are sort of a donation-based thing. So there's a hat that gets passed around or a tip jar at the door. It just depends on the house concert and what is expected. But, you know, somewhere between $10 and $25 is expected from each person. And then they also buy merch. And it's just nice because we also get to just hang with the people before and after. It's a lot more intimate. We get to actually have sort of real conversations and talk about things.
Often
and make friends. Yeah, there's often a lot of food. And it's fun.
And as Joel was saying, which I think is a really important distinction, it's not necessarily like a band entertaining for a party. It's a listening experience with all kinds of unique elements to it. After we're done playing, it very often does turn into a bit of a party and a socialization aspect, which is lots of fun. But one of the things that I really like about them, especially in a situation where it truly is acoustic, it very much reminds me of the process of actually writing a song. It's like people are there, and you're obviously performing finished songs, but you're performing them in the environment where they can sort of envision how it was when the song was created. Sitting in a living room with your guitar is usually how it starts.
Right. Okay. Let me ask a question about that, sort of related to that. I've always found that musicians in bands with a high level of innate musicianship tend to attract listeners for whom music is a largely cerebral experience. And I'd say musicians and songwriters who are great lyricists have a tendency to attract listeners who process music more emotionally. And you guys operate in both spheres pretty much all the time. I mean, you're all very, very high-level musicians, yet you're delivering a lot of emotional impact constantly. So who listens to the Novelists? Do you guys appeal to the people who listen with their heads or the people who listen with their hearts?
We are finding the same, what you just said. And there are people who are not generally used to connecting viscerally or more emotionally to something. They're more ethereal. They're more cerebral. We've been finding that we are usually able in that environment, the collective energy that happens in the room, not to get too hippie-ish, 20 to 40 people or 20 to 100 people in some of the bigger house concerts in a very small space, directing all of their attention to the band. And the band is also directing all of their attention back at the audience and to each other. You create this sort of cyclone of intention or a focus, and it's both cerebral and emotional, like you were pointing out. And I have found that almost nobody is immune to that. The level of potency has been almost universal at our shows. So we can look out during the song, we, in upwards of half the room is visibly crying. Once we get to that point in the concert, we get very caught up in the moment. It's palpable. You can feel it in the room. And people are listening to the story intellectually.
When it goes both ways. It's not just the audience that's feeling like that.
No, I was going to say, I mean, this is Zach. As the bass player in the band and not one of the lead vocalists, the goosebump moment has been happening for me as a musician as well. As I'm supporting the lyrics that are impacting the audience, I am also getting that feedback and getting goosebumps and just feeling that exact same thing.
So it's a synergistic experience for everyone when it goes really well.
That's awesome, because there's nothing quite like the experience of pouring your heart and soul into a song that you think really connects, and then having somebody walk up to you afterwards and say, "Hey man, what kind of strings do you use?"
That still happens, but
those strings sound so good. Like
I have actually broken down to the point of sobbing at two shows.
That's pretty incredible.
On stage, while singing.
And
there's also profundity happening in other ways too. It's not like the novelist concert search is just a bunch of crying though. That out as well. Yeah.
At this point in the conversation, the signal started to degrade to the point where we just lost the call, and we never got it back that day. So we communicated a few times via text and coordinated the continuation of the interview the following morning from Rock Springs, Wyoming, over breakfast. And you can listen to that in part two of the podcast. Just become a patron at patreon.com/SethHoran. We're going to play you out with a novelist's song, Morris and Estelle, and we'll see you after the jump.
They waited for a while, but time was running out, and they'd always kept their promises together in everything. So then, without a word, they took each other's hand on the 17th floor balcony. The neighbors said they found him and smashed to the ground and had to turn away. And on the face, the smiles that left a trace of what we couldn't say. It was our life, we lived it well. So excuse us now, and we'll spare ourselves some pain. Some pain, sign more.